නමෝ භගවතේ වාසුදේවාය.
Canto chapter 3 entitled Yamraj instructs his messengers, text 30.
Yatam sa bhagavan purushah purano narayanah swapurusher yadasat kritam nah. Swanam maho na vidusham rachitanjalinam kshantir garishyasi namah purushaya bhumne.
Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Then Yamraj, considering himself and his servants to be offenders, spoke as follows, begging pardon from the Lord. O my Lord, my servants have surely committed a great offense by arresting a Vaishnava such as Ajamil. O Narayan, O Supreme and the oldest person, please forgive us. Because of our ignorance, we failed to recognize Ajamil as a servant of your lordship, and thus we have certainly committed a great offense. Thus, therefore, with folded hands, we beg your pardon. My Lord, since you are supremely merciful and are always full of good qualities, please pardon us. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you. Purport. Lord Yamraj took upon himself the responsibility for the offense committed by his servants. If the servant of an establishment makes a mistake, the establishment takes responsibility for it. Although Yamraj is above offenses, his servants, practically with his permission, went to arrest Ajamil, which was a great offense. The Nyaya Shastra confirms, Brityaparade Swami no Dandaha. If a servant makes a mistake, the master is punishable because he is responsible for the offense. Taking this seriously, Yamraj, along with his servants, prayed with folded hands to be excused by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. Hare Krishna. In this translation and purport, Srila Prabhupada is describing how Yamraj, being a very responsible and perfect master of the Yamdutas, has taken responsibility for their actions and is offering obeisances and begging forgiveness from the Supreme Lord for the mistakes that the Yamdutas have committed. Everyone in this world, every living entity, has a need in the heart for love. That need for love in the heart inspires the living entity to act within this world, to exchange relationships in this world, to seek out enjoyments within this world, to satisfy that need for love within the heart. However, when that love is reposed on material objects, material personalities, material situations, then two things happen. One is that the love in the heart is not satisfied, because that love is unlimited. That need for love is unlimited. So one is that love is not satisfied. And two, when the senses engage in trying to exploit this world, then the senses become more and more dull, Because more and more bombardment of the things of this world, more and more different types of personalities and relationships are required to satisfy the senses. So there is need for love in the heart, which inspires action in the world. However, when one acts within this material world, neither is the heart satisfied with love, nor are the senses gratified. In fact, more and more bombardment is required, and lesser pleasure is experienced by the senses. So ultimately, a person becomes completely frustrated and thinks that there is no such thing as love, and it's never possible to attain such love. So forget this world and destroy oneself. Therefore, when such a person comes in contact with spiritual culture, real spiritual culture, in contact with Krishna consciousness, it becomes a little difficult to put faith in Krishna, to put faith in the devotees. Because so many times our faith has been not satisfied, rather it has been attacked, that it becomes very difficult to put faith that, okay, if I surrender to Krishna, if I surrender to the devotees, then I will actually experience love and my heart will be satisfied. Therefore, there is a nice quotation which explains that don't shut love out of your life by saying that it is impossible to find. The quickest way to receive love is to give it. The fastest way to lose love is to hold on to it. And the best way to keep love is to give it wings. Because it is said, if you love someone, set him free. If he comes back to you, he is yours. If he doesn't, he never was. So the quickest way to receive love is to actually give it. It's very interesting that when people say that no one loves me, I am feeling lonely, nobody understands me, I need someone should understand me. I have to offer my love and my heart to somebody who understands who I am and how I am. So such an interesting thing that we have a need for our heart to be given to others in love. Because the heart with oneself stinks. It rots practically. If you just hold on to the heart, you know, I'll not give my heart to anyone. I'll not reveal to anyone. I'll not offer to anyone the love of my heart. Then it becomes hard. It stinks. It actually rots with oneself. So it's so interesting that the whole world is running geared towards selfish gratification, sense enjoyment. The more I have, the more I'll be happy, more and more selfish. But the more one keeps one's heart to oneself, the more one accumulates things for oneself, the more it stinks, the more it rots. Because the best way to keep love is to give it wings, set it free. And the fastest way to lose it is to hold on to it. So everyone has a want to love a fitting master, to repose one's love in a fitting master. And that is what Srila Prabhupada explains in the Nectar of Devotion is the missing point in modern society. There is a pinprick in modern society. Everybody is trying to accumulate, but that makes the heart hard. One wants to give the heart. When you give the heart is not satisfied because the personalities are mundane, material, or the things are mundane and material. So that unlimited love is not satisfied. And the senses, by so much bombardment, they become dull. So Srila Prabhupada raises this point in the Nectar of Devotion that we all want to love a fitting master. However, where to repose this love in such a way that everyone can be satisfied and our heart can be completely satisfied? And that answer Srila Prabhupada gives is by reposing our love in Krishna. When we offer our love, our heart to Krishna, then one can be completely satisfied. Because Krishna is the perfect master. What are the qualifications, the symptoms of a great master, the perfect master? The first qualification is that such a master should take complete responsibility for the maintenance of the follower, of the disciple, of the servant. Because one is taking service from the servant, then one has to take complete responsibility for that servant. That's the definition of God. Eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman. That amongst all the chetanas of all the conscious people, there is one supreme conscious. And what is the quality of that supreme conscious, the personality of Godhead? Eko Bahunam, amongst all the unlimited eternal living entities. Eko, there is one supreme living entity. And how is that supreme different from all others? Yo Vidadati Kaman. That supreme person can satisfy the desires, can satisfy the needs of all the dependents. So that is the quality of a good master. Unless a good master can take full responsibility for the maintenance, unless he is capable to lead the disciple properly, he is not qualified to be a real master. We see in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam such an interesting episode. The four Kumaras, who are the first four personalities in the universe that Lord Brahma produces, they are his personal sons. They are inspired by Brahma to help him in his service. Brahma's service is to populate this universe. And the four Kumaras, they being very intelligent, understand that if we get into these activities of trying to help in the creation of this material world, these materialistic activities will definitely bind us. So therefore, they decide to remain just 4 years old, and they decide not to grow older than that, not to get married, and not to enter in any kind of material activities. They are completely Brahman realized, self-realized. They know the body is separate from the soul. Now, one time, these four Kumaras, they cross the gates, they cross the material world, the gates of heaven, the gates of Vaikuntha Loka, and they reach right in front of the main gate that enters into Vaikuntha Loka. And there they find two personalities, Jay and Vijay, the two gatekeepers who stop them. Who are you? How have you come here? And in this way, they stop the four Kumaras. Now the four Kumaras, because they are Brahman realized, they are not affected by the dualities of this world, good, bad, love, hate, all the things of this world, it doesn't affect them. So when they see that these two doorkeepers of Vaikuntha, they are trying to discriminate against these four Kumaras, trying to call them unqualified, trying to find faults with them, they say, you don't deserve to be here. You're acting like materialistic people who choose what is good for them and give up what is not good for them based on their own sense gratification and their own desires. So we curse you that you fall down from your position into the material world. Just at that time, the fitting master of these two servants, Jay and Vijay, the Supreme Lord, he appears on the scene right at the gate of Vaikuntha. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that the Lord knew that the four Kumaras were very eager for the darshan of his lotus feet. And this eagerness for the darshan of his lotus feet, because they were very eager to know who is that Supreme Lord, had caused these problems. They were eager to take the darshan of the lotus feet, and because of that eagerness, when Jay Vijay stopped them, they became angry and they chastised and they cursed Jay Vijay. So to resolve the issue, the Lord came with his own two lotus feet at the gate to give them darshan and to pacify them. And when the two beautiful lotus feet came, just by the fragrance of the tulsi that entered their nose, the four Kumaras were completely satisfied. In fact, what to speak of satisfied? Sankshobam aksharajusham apichitta tanvoho. They became completely agitated. Those personalities who are absorbed in Brahman, apichitta tanvoho, their chitta became very much agitated because of the transcendental fragrance from the tulsi of the lotus feet of the Lord. So then the Lord takes full responsibility for the mistakes that his two servants have performed. And he speaks so interestingly that even the Kumaras become bewildered. The Lord says that these two servants of mine, because they have made a mistake, I take responsibility. I am extremely sorry. I beg forgiveness on their behalf. Because they have offended Brahmanas like you. Brahmanas are so dear to me that when people offer direct offerings to me in flames, in ahutis, in yajnas, I do not accept those offerings. But when they offer to the Brahmana's mouths, then those offerings loaded with ghee are very much more palatable to me. I am completely satisfied by them. So you Brahmanas are so dear to me, and my servants have offended such Brahmanas. I take responsibility. I am extremely sorry. And then he goes on in so many verses to explain the glory of the Brahmanas. They are the best of the human beings. They are worshipable personalities. When we worship them, it's better to in fact worship them than to worship me directly. And he says, such devotees, such twice-born devotees, they are so worshipable that people consider my lotus feet to be purifying because I take the dust of their lotus feet. Such devotees are so dear to me. In fact, they are more dear to me than even my own body. I will not be pained to lop off my arm, to cut off my arms, to cut off the limbs of my body, just for the sake of my devotees. My devotees are so dear to me. And then the Kumaras become bewildered. Because the Lord has given equivocal speech. He has praised the Brahmanas and he has also praised his own devotees. And the Kumaras have now realized that actually the Lord is chastising them for cursing his devotees who are so dear to him, who may have made a mistake, but still they are so dear to him and he takes full responsibility for them. So in one sense, the four Kumaras have found fault with the Lord. And they become bewildered. Is the Lord glorifying us? That we are the Brahmanas and Jai Vijay has found faults with us and therefore they are wrong? Because we Brahmanas are so dear to him? Or is it that the Lord's devotees, his personal associates are so dear to him and we have found fault with them? And he being a responsible master, we have found fault with the Lord. And they become bewildered, they fold their hands and they surrender completely to the Lord. That's the amazing quality of the Lord. He completely settled the issue. By taking full responsibility for the event in his own hands, he showed his lotus feet to the Kumaras and also corrected them. That it was your mistake in cursing Jai Vijay because it was actually my own personal desire that they find this fault with you. They don't allow you inside, so you curse them and then they come to the material world to satisfy my desire of fighting. We also find that the master has to take full responsibility for the servant's actions. In fact, the master suffers if the servant makes mistake. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, I think this pastime comes, where Devanand Pandit is speaking from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srivas Thakur comes in that assembly by hearing the beautiful sound vibration of the Srimad Bhagavatam being chanted and starts feeling ecstasy. His heart is just overwhelmed with joy and symptoms of ecstasy come in his body. He starts shaking in thrills, his hair starts standing on end and he starts falling off from where he's sitting. So the disciples of Devanand the Pandit, they think that this person is a big disturbance. Why is he making such actions and such noises in this Bhagavad Katha? So they, in their arrogance, they just lift Srivas Thakur and they throw him outside from that assembly. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reminds Srivas Thakur of that incident in the Shat Praharya Leela, that you felt so bad at that time that you were kicked out from there. But that Devanand Pandit, because his disciples committed this offense and he did not take any action against them, he was fully responsible for that offense and therefore his heart has become dry. I have removed all ecstasy from his heart. Although he speaks on the Bhagavatam, still he does not experience any joy or any realization in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we find that the master has to take full responsibility and suffer punishment if the disciple commits a mistake. That's the first qualification of a good master. The second is that the master, see, when the master maintains the disciple, the most important thing is that the master can give solutions to the heart's problems of a disciple. of all the problems that one experiences, the mental and intellectual problems, they are the greatest sufferings that the person can go through. In fact, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Sammohat Smriti Vibramaha, Smriti Bhramshat Buddhi Nasho, Buddhi Nashat Pranashyati. This mental illusions, Sammohat, is so dangerous that Smriti Vibramaha, one's memory becomes bewildered, and Smriti Bhramshat Buddhi Nasho, one's intelligence is lost, Buddhi Nashat Pranashyati, finished. When one's paradigms, one's intelligence is lost, one becomes deranged, crazy. Although the world is there as it is, one cannot interact with the world because those mental and intellectual sufferings have made one crazy. At that stage, it is impossible to fight against Maya. One may know all the knowledge of the scripture, one may have great skills in life, but when the intelligence and mind is disturbed, it's impossible to fight against Maya. We find Ajamila in this very episode. He knew all the scriptures. He was so well behaved. He had the strength of following the instructions of his father. But in spite of all good qualities, when his mind became bewildered, when his intelligence was lost, finished, pranashyati, he had to fall down. So a guru is a person, a leader is a person who can actually give solutions to these mental and intellectual sufferings of the living entity. This great misery can be overcome by the instructions and the mercy of the spiritual master. We find that in Bhagavad Gita, when does Arjuna surrender? Not initially. Initially, he gives so many arguments that I will not fight. But then, when his mind becomes bewildered completely, he becomes indecisive. At that time, he surrenders. Karpanya dosho pahata swabhava pichhami tvam dharma sammuda chetaha. Dharma sammuda chetaha. When his chetana becomes sammuda and he becomes a kripana in the heart, at that time he surrenders. He says, Krishna, now I cannot logic, argue, reason anymore. I am finished. I have the skills, I have the power, I can destroy all of them. But I'm confused about my duty. What can I do? How can I act? And thus, he just surrenders to Krishna. And then Krishna, by his mercy and instructions, speaks the Bhagavad Gita and destroys his illusion. In fact, the Yamdutas also, they're also very powerful personalities. So powerful that once they go to pick up somebody at death, finished, that person's life is over for sure. Such personalities who have never been defeated, when they became bewildered that we have come to pick up this sinful Ajamila, we have a whole list of all his sins, and these four Vishnu Dutas are coming and they are saving him. When they become bewildered, even such powerful personalities who could never be stopped in the entire three worlds become suicidal. It's like traveling in a car with full speed with your brakes on. Everything is going perfect, a nice smooth car, the environment is wonderful, and you have the power in your hands, the control in your hands, and the brakes are on also full speed. It's such a miserable situation. It's so fearful, so scary that such powerful Yamdutas, Prabhupada explains in the purport that they want to commit suicide. They can't just handle it, and it's too much for them. And therefore they come to Yamraj, and they just surrender to him. They said, Yamraj, you have to explain to us. They're very angry with Yamraj now. Unless you can get rid of this anxiety in our mind, they're very angry with him. Either you solve this problem or we commit suicide. We can't live with this. And then Yamraj, like the perfect master, gives them this explanation that I am not the supreme person. Krishna, Narayana is the supreme personality of Godhead. And we are all in this world working under him, controlled by him, just like a bull is tied by a rope. It has no independence. Similarly, we have no independence. And thus, taking responsibility for them, Yamraj sets an example. And he shows by his own example in this verse how the Lord is the Supreme Person. He folds his hands at Lord Narayan, pays obeisances and begs forgiveness. That's showing by his example that the Lord is the Supreme Controller. And if I have made a mistake, If you have made a mistake, I take responsibility. And in that way, Yamraj pays obeisances to the Lord. So the master should be able to solve the problems of the follower, the servant, or the disciple. Like we find in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the incarnation of the Lord Vyasadeva himself becomes bewildered. And he's not able to find solutions to his problems. And he says, Narada, you can find solutions to my problems because you are my spiritual master. And just like the sun dispels all darkness, you can dispel the darkness within my heart. So you please, kindly find out what is the real problem in my heart and give me solutions to those problems. So serving material masters will not solve problems. Prabhupada said, that is the test of serving a master. One should be free from anxiety and peace. In fact, I was hearing a morning conversation of Srila Prabhupada, a morning walk just today morning, and Srila Prabhupada was saying that if one is not peaceful, then one is a rascal. By serving a master, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma, one should be peaceful and happy. And if one is not peaceful, that means one is not a devotee and one is a rascal. So that is Prabhupada's definition of finding service to a perfect master. One should actually feel peaceful. In another verse, Yamanacharya explains, Bhavantameva anucharan nirantaraha prashantanishesha manorathantaraha kadahamaikantikam nityakinkaraha praharshayishyami sanata jivitam. This verse explains the third qualification of the spiritual master. Bhavantameva anucharan nirantaraha. Nirantaraha, Yamanacharya is explaining. What is happening? Bhavantam, the waves of this material world are coming and hitting me again and again. Prashanta nihishesha manorathantaraha. And my mind is so much disturbed with unlimited number of desires and anxieties. But I want to find a master, a fitting master, at whose lotus feet, if I offer my heart, my love, and my service, then what will I experience? Kadahamaikantika nitya kinkaraha. Kadahamaikantika nitya kinkaraha. I can eternally become the servant of such a master. Praharshayishyami sanata jivitam. I will get shelter. Sanata jivitam. Anath is a person who has no shelter. And Sanath is a person who has actual shelter, a master to serve. And I will feel peace from all these anxieties. Bhavantameva anucharan nirantara. Again and again, these anxieties which are troubling me. So the master not only should be able to give peace, but the master should also be able to give eternity. Complete protection from the repeated cycle of birth and death. That is real protection. Because saving one's health, wealth, prosperity, that is asat sanyeshu, that's anyway going to be destroyed. But saving one's life, saving the spirit's soul, and giving the opportunity to the soul for eternal service, that is a real master. Praharshayishyami sanata jivitam nitya kinkaraha, so that I can eternally serve him. And that is where one should be able to repose one's love, where one will never have to face death again. That was the first theme of our discussion today, that how a real master like Yamraj, who has taken shelter of the original real master Vishnu, Lord Narayan or Krishna, should, number one, be completely responsible for the maintenance and the activities of the follower and the disciple. Number two, should be able to solve all the anxieties, difficulties, and should be able to give perfect instructions by following which the disciple should become free from all troubles. And third, one should be able to connect oneself to the connect the follower to the Supreme Lord so that one can give opportunity for eternal service to the soul and thus free one from the cycle of birth and death. Therefore it is said, he reasons ill who says that Vaishnavas die, for thou art still living in sound. Vaishnavas die to live, and while living, try to spread the holy name around. So that's the second theme that we shall discuss today. Because today is the divine disappearance day of Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, and Srila Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. This beautiful verse about the disappearance of the Vaishnavas was composed by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in glorification of Namacharya, Srila Haridas Thakur. And of course, it is also a perfect description for every real Vaishnava who actually leaves his body. And it's a very interesting verse, stanza, and we can analyze it. The first statement says, he reasons ill who says that Vaishnavas die. Now it's very interesting that somebody who says that Vaishnavas die has wrong reasoning. Why? Because nobody actually dies. Tata dehantara praptir. That in this body, when the body is finished, another body is achieved. The soul in this body is not destroyed when the body is destroyed. So Srila Prabhupada explains. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. That's the verse. So when the body is destroyed, it's not the person who dies. Na hanyate. So no one actually dies. In fact, in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, even a demon is preaching this philosophy. Hiranyakashipu, even a demon in those times knew that actually no one dies. And he explains to his mother and his sister-in-law that although Hiranyakashipu has died, you should not grieve over his dead body because actually he's still living. He's not dead. It's just that he's left the body. No one really dies. And he gives two beautiful examples to explain how no one actually really dies. Yathambasa prachalata taravopi chalaiva chakshusha brahmyamanena drishyate chalati babuhu. Two beautiful examples he gives to show that actually how no one dies. He says, yathambasa prachalata. Just like when water is moving, ambasa prachalata, at that time, if there is a tree which is reflected in the water, taravo pi chalaiva, the taravo api chalaiva, that tree also looks moving. So because of the movement of the water, the tree seems to be moving. What is the underlying statement? That is because the tree is reflected there. The reflected tree seems to be moving in the moving water. The original tree is not moving. The second example that Hiranyakashipu gives is Chakshusha Brahmyamanena Drishyate Chalata Ivabhu. Chakshusha Brahmyamanena. When the eyes, because of some derangement, are moving, a person thinks that Chalati Ivabhu, this whole world is moving. Say, because of some madness or because of a drunken state, the eyes start rolling. And people think that the whole world is actually rolling. The world is where it is, but the eyes are rolling because of the mind's disturbance. So similarly, because of the three modes of material nature which are constantly moving, it seems that the soul is also moving. But the soul is not moving, the soul is fixed in one place. Nitya sthanur, it's fixed. So the comparison is that just like the eyes are moving, the modes of material nature are also moving. And it seems that the world is moving, but actually the world is not moving. Similarly, it seems that the soul is taking the body, the soul is dying. Like people say, no, he's gone forever. The soul is not gone, he's not finished. He's not finished forever. He's just changed this body. So no one actually really dies. That's the first thing. And the second problem in this logic is that everyone is eternal. Therefore, he reasons ill who says that Vaishnavas die. And to explain how everyone is eternal, again Hiranyakashipu gives three beautiful examples.
Yathanalo darushu bhinna iyate, yathanilo deha gata pritakstitaha, yathanava sarvagatam na sajjate, tathapuman sarvagunashraya paraha.
These three beautiful examples he gives to show how everyone is actually eternal. The soul is separate from the body.
Yatha nalo darushu bhinna iyate.
See, just like fire is situated in wood, Darushu. When fire is manifested, it comes from the wood, but is perceived as different from the wood. Nobody says that one part of the wood has now come out from the other part of the wood. No, a fire is manifested and perceived completely as a different thing from the wood, although it is in the wood.
Yatha nilo deha gata pritakstita.
Similarly, there is air within the mouth and there is air within the nose. Although the air is within the nostrils and within the mouth, it is perceived as a different thing. It's completely different from the nostril and the mouth.
Yatha nabha sarvagatam na sajjate.
And just like everything within this world is existing within space. Space is everywhere, sky is everywhere, but still it is seen as a separate thing.
Tatha puman sarvaguna shraya paraha.
Tatha, similarly, puman, a person, is transcendental to this material body. He is encaged within this body, and this body comes from the soul, but still it is completely separate from the soul, just like the fire comes from the wood, but is completely separate from the wood. Or just like the air is within the nostril and the mouth, but is perceived as a separate thing. Or just as the sky is everywhere and everything is within the sky, but still the sky is separate. So the body has come from the soul, but still the soul is individual and separate from the body. So the soul is eternal. Therefore he reasons ill who says that anybody dies. What to speak of Vaishnavas die? So nobody actually dies. Everyone is actually eternal. Then what is death? What is death?
Death is simply a change of the conceptions and the conditionings of the living entity.
Karmana deva netrena jantur dehopapattaye. Now according to the karma that a living entity has, he is forced to be in the body for some time, the fixed period of time where he is allowed to perform activities, and then he is changed to another body depending on the conceptions that he is carrying. So this change of conceptions and conditionings after a fixed span of time is just called death. Therefore in the fifth canto there is a beautiful description given between a devotee's death and a non-devotee's death. So-called death, this change of conceptions.
Yathaihi kamushmika kamalam pataha suteshu dareshu daneshu chintayan sanketa vidvan kukale varatyayad yastasya yatnah shrama eva kevalam.
Now this verse speaks the difference between a devotee's so-called death and a non-devotee's so-called death, because actually there is no such thing as death. The soul is eternal. So it is explained that what is a materialistic person absorbed in?
Yataihi kamushmika kama lampataha.
A kama lampataha is absorbed in lusty desires. And therefore,
suteshu dareshu dhaneshu chintayan.
What is a chintayan? What is the thought process? Suteshu dareshu dhaneshu. The children, the money, basically the expansions from one's body. It means it could be even one's skills or the things that one creates. And then one is always thinking about that. And then the glory that one gets, taneshu chintayan, from all those things that one creates. Because one is always absorbed in these thoughts, therefore one feels very much great fear at the point of this change of these conceptions, this chintayan, these desires, which is the death from this body.
Sanketa vidvan kukale varatyayad.
But a vidwan, an intelligent person who has studied all the scriptures, if he or she also fears death, that means basically the change of these conceptions.
Yastasya yatnaha shrama eva kevalam.
Then all that effort to study the scripture is shrama eva hi kevalam. That means all this effort to practice spiritual life is to remove all these desires and all these conceptions. And that is real death. Because the soul doesn't die and the body is already dead. But the conceptions, these conditionings have to be cleared. And that is real death. So therefore he reasons ill who says that Vaishnavas die. Because in the mundane understanding, the Vaishnavas First of all, they are eternal. No one really dies. And because they have no material desires or no material conditionings, therefore they don't even die in the sense that the conceptions have been changed. Because the Vaishnavas have great desire to serve the Lord in this world. And then when they leave the body, they continue with that desire to serve the Lord, depending upon the desire of the Lord, either in this world or they go back to Godhead. Therefore, he reasons ill who says that Vaishnavas die. The second point Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions is, for thou art living in sound. What does it mean to live in sound? What does it mean to live in sound? Now, we all live basically in space. Everyone lives in space. We have a physical space that we live in. We have a mental space. We have a life space. Everyone lives in space. In fact, all creation takes place in space. Originally, the Akash is created. And then all the creation, everything is there that takes place. It takes place in space. The first creation that takes place in Akash is sound. Everything comes from sound, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam. See, it's common understanding to know that sound travels in space. Everybody knows that sound travels in space, sound waves. But how is sound created from space? It's interesting that whenever tightly bound particles are separated, then sound is created in that space. That's how sound is the first thing that is created. It's a little technical, but simple examples would make it clear. Whenever tightly bound particles in space are separated, then the first thing that happens is that sound is created. That's why the first thing is that sound is created. Let's take, for example, a chalk. When we break a chalk, a sound snap comes. Because the tightly bound particles of a piece of chalk have been separated. So the sound snap comes. Or when you write on the board, then a screeching sound comes because the particles from the chalk have been separated to the board. Or when a space shuttle goes into space, and there is so much sound because of the heavy blast that comes and all the particles in the air of that space shuttle, they are moving. Or say, for example, you know, when we blow balloons, sometimes children blow balloons, so the air particles in the balloon are very much compressed. So instead of tying up the balloon, if you just leave it, then one noise comes from the balloon, you know? Pee, poom, some noise comes from the balloon. Children enjoy that. Why does that noise come? Because the compressed particles in the balloon, the air, is now released. When particles are separated, then sound is produced. And in common sense language, you know, how does a carpenter check the wood? He knocks on the wood. If a lot of sound comes and the wood is very porous, that means the particles, they're very separate from each other. So he doesn't like that. In fact, if a dull sound comes, then he knows the particles are very much close to each other. So very little sound is produced. In fact, when we speak also, how does the sound come out? When there is tension and release between the throat muscles, the sound box, then the tension and release, the separation and coming close of the tissues of the throat creates sound. And then based on one's mouth and the air within one's mouth and the separation of that air and the bringing closer of that air, sound comes out. So sound is created as the first element in space. And devotees live in connection with spiritual sound. And therefore they live in sound. Therefore thou art living in sound. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Arjuna comes back from Dwarka, and he's feeling great separation and pain because Krishna has left this world, he remembers the instructions of the Lord and he says, Desha kalartha yuktani hrittapo pashamanicha haranti smaratan chittam govinda bihitani me. He says that Desha kalartha yuktani, I am going to take shelter of Krishna's instructions which he gave me in the Bhagavad Gita, and these instructions, they work in all time, place and circumstances. So that sound vibration that Krishna gave was not a material sound which changes in time, place and circumstance. That's transcendental sound. And when Arjuna took shelter of the transcendental sound, haranti smaratas chittam hritta popashamanicha, his heart became satisfied and his mind became attracted to Krishna. That transcendental sound still gave him the same experience
that he had when he had heard the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, thou art still living in sound. Because the devotees always live in touch with Krishna through transcendental sound, through Krishna's instruction, and therefore they live eternally on the transcendental plane.
Vaishnavas die to live, and while living, try to spread the holy name around. What is this die to live? People live and then they die, no? What is this die to live?
In fact, this seems to be a contradiction, because the first statement says, he reasons ill who says that Vaishnavas die. That means nobody dies. And now he's explaining that Vaishnavas die to live. Do they die? Do they don't die? What is this die to live?
Sachinandan Maharaj explains that just like there are two births, the material birth and the spiritual world birth, there are two deaths. The death of the body and the death of the false ego. If there is death of the false ego, then that is real death. And then the death of the body is just like changing from one room to another. Or he explains, from one hand of the Lord to the other hand. Because the material and the spiritual world, both are the energies of the Lord. So if the death to the false ego has taken place, then one simply, it's very normal. In fact, it is something joyful. Happiness lies in freedom, not in bondage. That's why when prisoners are set free, it's a cause of celebration. So death for a devotee is that he dies to live. He dies to his false ego to live an eternal life. And that is a cause of celebration. And while living in that transcendental platform, what does he do? Tries to spread the holy name around. Gives connection to everyone to the Supreme Lord. Gives inspiration to everyone to connect to the Supreme Lord. And on this day, on the divine disappearance of Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Srila Raghunath Das Goswami and Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, we can take inspiration and shelter from their pastimes and activities, their behavior and characteristics. So many unlimited of them, of these pastimes, that they give us heart, strength, so that we can also transform. We can die to the false ego to actually live. And while living, try to spread the holy name around. Therefore, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj once mentioned, if you have nothing worth dying for, then you have nothing worth living for. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. It's late now. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanande.